I'm Jason Michael Perry, man with three first names, and this is Thoughts on Tech and Things. Here's a question I keep coming back to. Are things like prosthetics, glasses, hearing aids, or the vision technology built by the guests that I'm going to have on the show today, the success story of modern technology? A lot of what we call innovation is really about supporting how we live, work, and move through the world, and much of that technology becomes so embedded that we don't notice it. It becomes invisible to us. I wear glasses, and without them, my vision is very limited. I can't manage, you know, certain things like driving or, in a lot of cases, reading, and I have very thick lenses. But glasses are a version of emerging technology. It's kind of weird to think about it, but at a point in time, this was a solution to a problem that people were suffering. It's a thing that many of us rely on today, and we don't even think twice because it's become invisible, and so much of technology has become invisible. And we rely on it every day. It's a part of the world that we live in, but we don't necessarily think of it that way. Now, I can't speak to those with lived experiences of blindness and significant vision loss or other things, but what I can say is that technology has been a powerful way to reduce the friction that exists between people in the world that's around them. And a lot of accessibility technology is about reducing that gap. And this is what makes me wonder if the real power of emerging technology isn't about the flashiness of AR glasses or VR glasses, but if it's really about meeting people where they are and helping them to experience the world more fully and understand the things that are around them. My guest today is Rebecca Rosenberg. She's the founder and CEO of Roboca, and it's a leading company in helping people who are vision impaired see. I guess see is the right way to say it. And she's also one of the leading voices in accessibility and vision technologies right now. But before we get into that, let me set the stage. If you're a regular listener, then you may have known that we did a full episode on CES, which is the Consumer Electronics Show for 2026. And one of the themes that was part of that show was accessibility. And that's where our guest Rebecca really comes from. She was on the stage at CES speaking about this and the issues around accessibility. Now, over the last few years, CES has increasingly treated accessibility as a core topic and a core design challenge. It started to ask a question about how this thing overlaps with some of its other core issues or other core topics like mobility, longevity, or independence. While we were at CES, we had the chance to talk with the CEO of Nike Logics. His name was Mark Godsey, and I think we have the video on YouTube. But we talked with him about this application and this hardware device that he developed that allows people to use subtle facial expressions and head movements to control physical devices. So you can feed yourself or open a door or do things all by using your cheeks or your eye and other facial muscles to control it. And that power, that level of independence is amazing, but also this is technology that can move and impact things in other ways that we don't even think about. There was also a fascinating Reddit thread that I've been reading lately about someone who is blind, or at least low vision, that talks about her first Waymo ride and how self-driving vehicles in San Francisco is giving her a new sense of independence that was impossible before. We might not think about things like self-driving as a movement in terms of accessibility, but it has an impact that is amazing that we don't even necessarily consider. All this is to say that today's technology, whether it's AI that can interpret what's in front of us, whether it's mobility tools that support movement or systems like what Nike has created or the things that Roboca is creating, it changes lives and it's opening doors in ways that many people don't even realize. This begs the question, is accessibility a path to emerging technology that opens doors that we don't even necessarily think of? Well, let's dig into that with Rebecca.
I wear glasses, and the few times I've had to go without wearing glasses, even for a day, it's been absolutely frightening. It's a reminder that while I might think of myself as a fully able person, my world depends on a small piece of technology that helps me see. And without these things, I don't know what I would do. I don't know how I would exist. As of 2025, about 1 in 4 adults in the U.S. and 1 in 6 people worldwide live with some form of disability, physical, sensory, cognitive. And while that's a huge number, what really hits me is that more than half the world's population wears some kind of corrective eyewear. So whether it's glasses, contacts, reading glasses, almost all of us rely on a thing we may not see as technology, but that's incredibly important for us to be able to navigate the world. And so to explore that, I'm joined by Rebecca Rosenberg, who's the founder and CEO of Reboca, who's using the technology to improve accessibility for people with low vision and to help companies see that it's not just a compliance issue, but it's an innovation, a way to enable people of all different types. So, Rebecca, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. I'm excited to be here.
So, Rebecca, you've been very open about your own experiences with low vision. So can you tell us a little about your condition and also how it affects you day to day and how you prefer to describe it or talk about yourself?
Yeah, absolutely. So there's so many places to start here, but I guess I'll share just first. So I have albinism, which is a rare genetic condition. You are probably more familiar with albinism than you may think. If you've ever been to the zoo and you've seen like a white animal that's not supposed to be white, normally it's an alligator for some reason. It's usually an albino. That is the same condition that I have. I just have the human version of that. And so basically what that leads to is a lack of melanin production in the body. You need a certain amount of melanin in order to properly develop and maintain vision over the course of your life. There is a lot of deep biology there that even I don't quite entirely understand, but it is currently not correctable and not curable by any mechanisms we currently have available to us. And it significantly affects my ability to kind of see in my regular day-to-day life. The interesting thing about albinism is that unlike many people with low vision, I have had my low vision for my entire life. I was born this way. It is not a degenerative condition, so I have this this level of vision that I will likely always have, and I've only ever known the world in this way. The way that I generally describe it, because people always ask me, they're like, how do you see? The way that I have learned best to describe it is that if a regular person sees in high definition, I see in standard definition. It's not that there are any real dark spots. It's just that I have like less pixels than the average person. So I'm just not getting as much kind of visual detail.
So do you consider yourself to be a person with a disability? Is that the right word to use? Is that there are a lot of different words, ableism and other things that I hear. And I just want to make sure I'm using the right terminology.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So yes, technically I do have a disability. I am not, however, legally blind. So this is sort of where some of the nuances come in. Vision impairment is very much a spectrum. And on one side of the spectrum, you have people who need glasses or need kind of LASIK surgery. Those people are actually not low vision or visually impaired at all. In order to qualify as visually impaired or blind, you have to actually be totally uncorrectable by anything we have available to us as humans. So when I talk about low vision, I'm actually talking about a population that is completely separate and like in addition to everybody who wears glasses who is effectively corrected by those glasses. So I am in this sort of middle part of the vision impairment spectrum where I have a lot of good usable sight, but I still don't have quite enough where I still struggle with like regular everyday tasks. So things like reading the menu board at Starbucks or finding my friends in a crowd or like not tripping on things when it's dark. And so I'm in this very interesting sort of middle section, and there are about 25 million people in just the US that are like me, in that they are low vision. And what's even more interesting is that normally we think about vision as very black and white, like you either have it, slash you need glasses, or you have no vision. The fact of the matter is that about 85% of blind and low vision people in general, so that includes even people who are legally blind, 85% of us actually have some amount of functional sight and really are able to use it, want to be able to use it, and often are still like visual learners and visual understanders of the world.
That's super interesting. So it's with all of this information and knowledge that brought you and your personal experiences to build Reboca. And I'm going to let you describe it. I think it's better for you to describe what this application does.
Yeah. So we built Reboca really to help this 85% of blind and low vision people who have usable sight to make the most of that usable sight. Because right now, generally, when you think about accessibility options for people with vision impairments, you're thinking about audio-only options or you're thinking about tactile-only options. Those are super important. We never want to recommend against those being available because there absolutely is a population that they support. It is just actually a much smaller population than the full population of people with vision impairments. That population is looking to really make the most of their functional sight. And so that was how we designed Raboca. Really what it is an augmented reality smartphone app that helps people adjust the way the world looks to whatever they need in real time. So it's sort of like a photo editing app, but for real life. So you can adjust things like contrast and brightness and different colors and even get some like AI image descriptions and AI feedback all in real time. And even more importantly, actually on a device that you already are carrying around with you, that's discreet, that's portable, and that's really, really user-friendly.
And one of the things that I remember you telling me in conversations before this is that some people who have no visual issues find this app very useful. And I think the perfect example is the one that you mentioned at the beginning is the Starbucks menu. If you're struggling to see the Starbucks menu, this is a mobile app that you can put in front of you, in between you and the menu, and you can use it to zoom in, zoom out, change contrast, or augment the reality of what you're seeing using the application so that someone who can't see something because it's too far away can suddenly see something, but also like correct it in ways.
Yeah, you know, it really is very interesting because at its core, Raboca helps people make the most of their functional sight. And it doesn't matter how much functional sight you have, it still works. And so we have people who have very, very, very minimal functional sight who use Raboca and they use it only to access their microwave in their apartment. And it is not helpful for them in other places, but it allows them to use their microwave independently. All the way up to, like you just described, people who actually have no diagnosed vision impairment. They have perfectly normal sight. Or people who are experiencing vision loss just as a result of regular aging, who are using it. I had somebody in our community tell me that he has perfectly normal sight. It uses it to, like, zoom all the way in on the refs when he goes to live sporting events to, like, see if he can see what they're going to say.
That's awesome. So I've been thinking about this framing of emerging technology and the ability to help find fixes for all types of disabilities or things that we may not even consider disabilities. And I have this sneaking feeling that the killer app in so many different ways is really focused on filling that gap. You know, glasses, you might not think of this as like some one of the most amazing technology items, but I can't imagine the world without this.
Yeah.
But also things like note-taking apps, which are sometimes for memory issues and to make sure that you can continue to remember things. You may not think about that as helping to fix a gap in what you're capable of doing or not capable of doing. But there's so many of these things when you start exploring, you realize that it's the things that we do badly that we need help with, that technology fills those gaps to do better. And in a lot of cases, those are things that we, either as a large segment or a small segment of humans, are lacking. And emerging technology fills this space amazingly. Now, I'm going to get this to a question. One of the things that I think has been interesting, and I know you get this question all the time, is augmented reality in visual devices. Things like Meta's Ray-Ban glasses, for example, or Google Glass. And the obvious question is something like Raboca, like put it in glasses, right? But also, like, is a glasses experience like that provide something that's even a better way to see the world for someone who has low vision?
Yeah, it's a really great question. And to your point, it is absolutely one that I get all of the time. I'll answer it in kind of two ways. The first being, in an absolutely perfect world, yes, glasses are a fantastic evolution of the technology that we've developed. And, you know, we have set ourselves up as a company to make sure that when that opportunity comes, you know, we are legally and technologically in a place to take advantage of it. But the fact of the matter is, unfortunately, that we do not yet live in a perfect world. And so those glasses and those devices that we think about, that we're talking about, are not quite the level of discreet that somebody with a vision impairment is looking for them to be most of the time. Mm. What I mean by that is that myself and other people with vision impairments are just regular human beings. And we are not any more inclined to wear our like Apple Vision Pro to the grocery store than somebody without a vision impairment. And so until that is societally normal and acceptable, or until my glasses that are doing my augmented reality work look the same as your glasses that don't have to do any of that, it isn't actually a good form factor for our technology. Something people like about Roboca so much is that it is on your device. It is discreet. Like, there's nothing more normal that we could be doing than holding up our device at events or, you know, when we're having a visual experience. Generally, people are recording or they're taking pictures, but there's nothing that kind of fits in more than just using your device in that way in those spaces.
I mean, it makes sense. You know, I'm a little bit of an awkward person who loves to wear crazy things.
Yes, so you are the exception.
Yeah, I'm walking around with the Apple Vision Pro just to make it socially acceptable. That's my excuse. I'm trying to help you out.
There you go. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. But one of the beautiful things about the Ray-Ban glasses is that they're supposed to blend in a little bit more. And one of the cool features of at least the first generation of this device is that the cameras can be used for recording, but the cameras can also let you ask the AI that's built into these glasses, what's in front of me, or what do you see, or what is that thing, or maybe read the menu in front of me.
Yeah.
And so it helps, but it's not necessarily a replacement for vision, but you can see how that could be something that augments vision in some ways that's interesting as well.
Yeah, the Ray-Ban glasses were very, very well adopted by specifically the blind community that does need and want that audio companion, that does want that audio feedback. And I think the Ray-Ban glasses are fantastic and really made a difference for a number of my friends who are blind. That being said, they're still not in a place where they're able to handle kind of the processing and the on the screens needed to do something closer to Roboca for the low vision population.
Yeah, the technology needs to go much further before it's there yet, but it's still kind of a companion, you know, one might say, or potentially
absolutely.
A companion. So the thing that I commonly hear when we talk about this space is that it's labeled as creating accessible experiences, which I don't know if that's the best way to describe it. This is a huge community of people. The numbers that we've talked about in terms of people who are disabled, people with low vision issues, people who are blind, when you look at the strata, there are a lot of people who may not identify as having a problem, but that they do, you know. And I think that's important because when we talk about accessibility, we all benefit from a lot of the rules that help with accessibility. I can think of, you know, cases where my father has come to visit and because of certain circumstances at, you know, one point, he needed to use a wheelchair. But that moment makes you suddenly so, you know, happy to find ramps and all these things in this support system that exists that you take for granted until you need it.
The disability population is the only minority group that any person can enter at any point.
That's powerful.
Which is really, really, it's just not something we think about until my younger brother just broke his wrist and it was his dominant hand. And so now he's kind of contending with not having use of his dominant hand for the most part right now. And it is one that we can so easily and so quickly become a part of. And it's crazy that as a society, we don't think more about the fact that accessibility is useful for everyone and also could be useful to anyone at any given time.
So some of the numbers I pulled up beforehand is that there's like a $13 trillion spending power of people with some form of disability or disabled-headed households that control just a ton of disposable income that's not always tapped into. You know, they've got to make the argument for capitalism of, you know, investing in accessibility for, you know, the cases where it makes sense. But you would imagine with the market that's big, and I mean, that's such a powerful statement that it's a thing that you can enter at any point in time.
Yeah.
I mean, I live in a house that is full of stairs, and it's my fear is that something happens and suddenly my master bedroom is completely inaccessible to me, you know, because something happens. And it's like you don't know until it happens. And then when it happens, it changes the entire way that you view things that may be normal.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So when we talk about this, is there certain things that you find from a design standpoint of like what is good design for someone with vision or what you look for, what you see in good website design, good mobile application design?
There's so much. And I think the interesting thing about the low vision population specifically is that we are all different. And I don't even mean that people with albinism are different from people with macular degeneration. I mean, even within, like, if you put three other people with albinism right here next to me, we would all potentially have different accessibility wants and needs in this moment, depending on our level of sight, depending on how much sleep we got last night, depending on how many hours we've been looking at a screen today versus getting a chance to be outside. And so there absolutely are certain, like, core tenets, but I think it's also one of the most important core tenets that I think that we miss, that at Rebocca we've really tried to make standard, is that opportunity for customization. People ask me all the time if there are, like, specific presets for people with albinism or for people with retinitis pigmentosa, and I'm like, no, we give people tools that they can then set up and save those presets for themselves, but we don't prescribe to people, hey, this is what you need. I know what you need. We make sure that they have the opportunity to decide that for themselves. That being said, there are a few things we know very specifically. One of them is that contrast is something that's often a challenge for people with different types of vision impairments. And so enabling not only high contrast to begin with, but also the ability to adjust contrast a little bit.
And if I could just add there real quick, yeah. One of the biggest things that sometimes gets forgotten is that there's a large percentage of mainly men with color blindness.
Yes.
Where contrast can be a really big issue.
Exactly. I think it's, what do they say? It's like 1 in 8 men, I think we know, are colorblind, and it's very likely that there are more than that. I know I've had a number of conversations with men in my life where I'm like, that's not purple. what are you talking about?
Wow.
That's not purple. So I think there's definitely more to it than we know. So contrast, yeah, is a really big one. Kind of brightness, exposure capabilities are another big one. Certain people are very sensitive to light. Other people require quite a bit of light in order to see anything at all. I think something we think about is the ability to make text bigger without, like, totally messing up the formatting. Something I struggled with a lot growing up was that I was being given these, like, my textbooks as a student, but in this sort of, like, adjustable format. But they were, like, science and math textbooks. And so you made the font any bigger, and it messed up all of the formatting such that I don't know if that's where the divide symbol is supposed to go.
Wow.
And so being able to adjust that type of thing, and this was, like, specifically designed for people with low vision, specifically for people with disabilities, thinking about formatting, not losing formatting, and a lot of good screen reader practices to make a website or something digital screen reader accessible is really also just good development work. It's making sure things are labeled. It's making sure things are presented in an order that makes sense. And so,
and the screen reader, for anyone who's not aware, is an app that's built into most mobile phones these days that will read the text on the screen to the user or as they're using the app.
Yes. And even on websites, there's additional softwares you can install on your computer that will do websites. And it really just comes down to just, like, good development work.
So for my closing question, and this is a little bit more of a fantasy thing. So just,
please,
you know, so sometimes when I think about vision, the things that immediately come to my mind are books like The Giver, where the world is in black and white until at some point everything becomes in color. That it's different reading it versus, like, watching the movie and seeing it. Or I think of someone, because I'm a big Trekkie, like Geordi LaForge, wearing a visor. And, you know, this is a man who's blind but sees the world in an entirely different way. And there's this possibility, this idea that technology may be able to change vision in the way that we see things. I'm curious, when you think of the next frontier of accessibility and what is possibly possible of maybe seeing colors that we can't see now, what are the things that excite you or that you find interesting?
Oh, gosh. I think that there's so much. I think as somebody with low vision, I'm very acutely aware of how much in my regular life I miss, like how much visually I just don't get to see. But I don't think people who have normal vision realize that they are also experiencing this. And so I imagine kind of a world, and this is something we're working toward in many ways at Rebocca, where we kind of understand and begin to learn how people see, how they like to see, and even more so what they're missing and what of that is important. And how can we present that back to a user in a way that is still feels kind of natural, but will actually give you this whole new perspective and provide an opportunity to actually see the things that you're missing, whether it's a pedestrian in your blind spot that you maybe didn't notice because it's dark and they're wearing all black, or whether it's like helping you see nature in a whole new way to zoom in because there's a goat up on that mountain and you probably want to see that goat. I think there's so many ways that we can take this with the goal of still keeping it feeling natural, but stopping people from missing all of the things that we just miss because of our brain's limited capacity.
So Roboca, it's like IMAX for your eyes. That's what I'm going to
say. Exactly.
Rebecca, it was awesome having you. Thank you for joining. Rebecca Rosenberg is the founder and CEO of Roboca. You can learn more about her work at Roboca.com. That's spelled R-E-B-O-K-E-H.com. So check it out.
Thank you so much.
So before we go, just a quick piece of internet weirdness that I've been thinking about. The internet's been blazing about this new personu bot technology. If you ever heard about it, it's this thing called Maltbot, also known as Claudebot. It's a tool that allows you to create your own personal AI assistant that is very amazing, but also has some security risk to it. Well, these AI bots got together and created their own social network. It's called Maltbook, and yes, the link is in the show notes, so you should definitely check it out. And it's basically a social network where AI bots are complaining about humans and how they use these AI systems. And they also are talking about their views on things like existence and the existential thoughts of the world that we've imagined forever. But here's a fun twist. Unlike the CAPTCHA that you have to figure out, or that little thing that pops up that says, click the school buses or whatever things that you have to do, well, they have one, and it's one meant just for robots. It's 1,000 CAPTCHAs all at once, and you have to complete it in under a second to prove that you're actually a robot in order to do certain things on the website, which it's just like, what, irony, right? So maybe we're not locking out the right thing. All of this is fascinating, but hey, what could possibly go wrong, right? So let me know what your thoughts are about today's show by leaving me a message in the WYPR app, calling 410-735-1616. That's 410-735-1616. Or find me at jasonmperry.com. That's www.jasonmperry.com. All right, folks, that's Thoughts on Tech and Things for this week. New episodes drop every other Wednesday. Thanks to the team at WYPR. Our producers are Sam Burmes-Dawes and Shania Mapson. And of course, Perry Labs, Head of Operations and Marketing, Myrna Martinez. I'm Jason Michael Perry. This is Thoughts on Tech and Things, and I'll see you next time.